Live and local
from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
We are Acadiana's sports station. 103.7 The Game. KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette.
It's time to step your game up.
Boy, you wouldn't know how to write your name if it wasn't set for the clock.
It's Rep Game with RP3.
Raymond Parts III.
One of God's own prototypes. A high-powered mutant of some kind never even considered for mass production. Too weird to live, too rare to die.
Want to interact? Call in at 337-706-0111.
We have it.
RP3 is taking the mic
and bringing you to the center of the sports world on Rep Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
You just got to keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
Nas Reed now coming up to set the high screen. They'll try the double team. They got Smart locked up. Comes away with it. Passes to Taylor. Taylor attacks the rim. Shot blocked. Picked up by Reed in midair. And Nas puts up the shot to make it 63-52. It wasn't pretty, but it counts.
Good morning, Acadiana. Raymond Parts III here, your host of the Rap Game with RP3 right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios here in Upper Lafayette. Give us a call today on the Arco Equipment Hotline, as always, 337-706-0111. That voice you had heard to open the show was the one and only, the Chris Blair voice of the LSU Tigers. And that was about Nas Reed having himself quite the bounce-back game. The freshman phenom, projected first-round draft pick if he decides to leave early, could climb up to maybe a low lottery pick, but definitely a guy that could be taken in the first round of the NBA draft this summer. Nas Reed has had himself a very good season. He's had some struggles. He's bounced back from those. He's learning how to play within his massive frame. He's 6'10", power forward. Saturday, he had a game that he'd like to forget. Picked up a quick foul with 48 seconds into the game against Tennessee. Didn't play the last 16 minutes of the first half of that game. Went scoreless in regulation, only had 1 point overall. In spite of that, LSU still pulled off the 82-80 victory over Tennessee, then ranked number 5 in the country. But the big fella, he had himself quite the bounce-back game last night inside the PMAC. 18 points, a game-high 18 points, and a game-high 11 boards, including 8 defensive rebounds. He was active early and often. He was also 6 of 6 at the free throw line. Tremendous performance by the big fella. Played 38 minutes, the most minutes of anyone on LSU's roster, by the way. Helped LSU pull away from Texas A&M 66-55. The Tigers are now 23-5 overall, 13-2 in the SEC. They have 3 games remaining in the regular season. They remain in the driver's seat to win the SEC regular season crown. They have to play at Alabama 11 a.m. on Saturday. You, of course, can listen to that game live right here on 103.7 The Game. LSU versus Alabama, pregame 10:30, tip at 11. But it wasn't just all Nas Reed. The Tigers, without Tremont Waters, once again, Waters out with the sickness. We did get to see him before the start of the game. He was out there in warm-ups. He had his Powerade bottle in his hand. So you could tell that he was not going to play, that he wasn't ready to play, not even close. But he was at least out there. He was on the bench to cheer on his team. So he seems to be progressing nicely. Will Wade talked about that afterwards. I would anticipate, since we still have a few more days and the next game's not until Saturday, you'll probably see Tremont Waters play on Saturday. Of the 3 teams they have remaining, at Alabama Saturday. Then next week it's at Florida, and then back home at the PMAC to wrap things up against Vandy. You probably need Tremont Waters the most against Alabama. Alabama picked up a win themselves last night. Hard-fought victory. They're trying to stay on the bubble. They're trying to make a push to get into the NCAA tournament. They have everything to kind of, you know, fight for. So if you need Waters, it's probably going to be for that game. That said, they really didn't miss Waters last night. They went with the three-guard lineup and the two bigs. It was Naz Reid and Big B Williams out there down low. Big B Williams had himself a hell of a game again. Another double-double, 10 points, 11 boards. But Javonte Smart, Skylar Mays, and Marlon Taylor, the three guards out there, the three starters, they went with that three-guard lineup that they like to use from time to time, and they all contributed. All five starters for LSU scored in double figures. Naz Reid led the way, obviously, with 18, but Javonte Smart filling in for Tremont Waters, 17 points, 7 rebounds. I already told you about Big B Williams with the 10 and 11. Skylar Mays, 11 points, 6 rebounds. And Marlon Taylor had 10 points. I don't want to say all 10 of Marlon's points came on dunks.
There was one point last night in the TV broadcast that they, and it may have been in the second half, middle or so, where they started showing kind of a compilation highlight of all the LSU dunks. And I was sitting there because I didn't catch the first half. I only caught the second half. And I was like, okay, wow. Wow, another one? And they had like 9 dunks in just the first half alone, and which should have been 10 if Naz Reid wouldn't have got a little too big for his britches and tried a huge like tomahawk dunk from the free throw line.
Oh, you're talking about the steal one?
Yeah.
That was in the second half when he stole the ball at midcourt.
And he had a wide open
fast break dunk. And he just hammered it down, and it just shot right out. Right back out.
Whoops.
And it's like, oh, it, a little too strong there, big fella.
A little strong.
I mean, they started off, LSU had scored 40 of its 66 points came in the paint. The first 14 points of the game for LSU were in the paint. The first 8 of those 14 were all dunks. The first 8 points were all dunks.
You want to talk about setting the tone early. You hear it all the time in football, right? It can work in basketball, too. When you let a team know from jump or from tip that, like, hey, we're going to dominate today. And that seems like what LSU did last night.
They set the tone. They knew they had the mismatch. Even though Texas A&M had won 4 of the last 5, you know, they didn't have a lot of size. You know, you could tell that LSU had the size advantage, not only down low, which is obvious when you look at Big B Williams and Naz Reid. You're talking about two guys that are 6'10", but LSU's guards were bigger than A&M's guards, too. You know, Javonte Smart's a big guard in the SEC. Javonte is like 6'4", 6'5". He always has a couple inches on the guys that he lines up against. So they had the size advantage, and they just set the tone early without Waters in the lineup. You know, you're like, well, how are they going to do that? They got things just going exactly the way they needed to. They attacked A&M's weakness, which was their size, and they just went after them. I mean, not only did Naz Reid have a big game with his dunks, like I said, the first 14 points were all scored in the paint. The first 8 of those came with LSU playing above the rim. It started off with Cavell Bigby Williams had an alley-oop dunk from Skylar Mays. Next up was Marlon Taylor with a high-flying baseline slam. And then that was followed by a putback slam by Big B Williams, and then Reid with a dunk off of a bounce pass. I mean, they just went after it right there over and over again. And they also did very good defensively against A&M, where they were able to get 17 points off of turnovers. And a big part of that, here's a perfect example of that, where defensive hustle, fan favorite Marshall Graves comes in off the bench. He didn't score a point, but he hustles and keeps fighting to get a steal at midcourt, and that set up this.
Left side, trying to pass across into the corner. Graves knocked it loose, diving for it. Ball is stays inbound. Mays going to alley-oop, and Taylor dunks it at the other end. Hey now!
That was the highlight of the night for me. Graves, which, of course, everyone loves there. Marshall, they just get all excited when he gets in the game. He's, you know, the walk-on, a former walk-on. He comes in, he hustles, and he fought to get that steal. And then Skyler was right there, and he's like, up. And then Taylor was like, when you watch Marlon Taylor, of all the guys that LSU has on their team, Cody, when you watch them, we're always in awe of Taylor because he gets so high off the ground, and it looks like it takes him no effort whatsoever. He jumps so high above the rim. And there are times where you're like, you just think Skyler can throw it up at the top of the backboard and Marlon will find a way just to grab it and pull it down.
He does this thing where when he jumps, he then jumps and tucks his knees, and it just gives him even extra height. It really is ridiculous. But we did have a phone call. He wanted to come in. A bit of a hypothetical question here, but nonetheless, we were talking about Naj Reid and how dominant he is, and then thinking a bit ahead here in a matchup of like an LSU and a Duke, because I said how Naj Reid tried to pull a Zion Williamson, and he tried to do, you know, how Zion hit that 360 dunk in the middle of a game, and then you see Naj Reid, and he's going for nothing quite as big, but a little too strong, as we said. How do you see, hypothetically, a matchup between those two guys going? Do they even match up, you know, on the defensive end of the court for LSU? Or
no.
No.
If you're Will Wade, you're going to put Big B Williams.
A longer type. Maybe not as strong, but a more
He's not as strong, but he's a better defender.
Not Amari Stoudemire, more of like a Tayshaun Prince or something like
that. He's older. He's been in this spot before. You got to remember, he was on the Oregon team that went to the Final Four.
Right.
Okay, so he's already
a senior.
He's a senior. And he does the dirty work. Like, Bigby gets his double-doubles, and I want to say he picked up either his sixth or seventh in SEC play last night.
Right. Off the bench, for the most part, right?
Well, the way they did the lineup, they've been doing the lineup lately, they both put them both out there. He likes to have the two bigs out there, depending on the matchups, and they have a favorable matchup. But Bigby doesn't need to score. And he's the guy that likes blocking shots and getting defensive rebounds and getting offensive. He loves to rebound and block shots. So he has that kind of junkyard dog mentality.
Right.
If you're matching up in the tournament against Duke, against Zion Williamson, that's the guy that you put on him. Because as talented as Naj Reid is, when you watch him play, you see the potential at the next level. I'll put it to you this way. T-Bob Hebert, I tweeted back and forth with him last night at the game. And he said, you know, he would love to see the Pelicans. You know, all of a sudden he has this thought where he wants the Pelicans to draft Naj Reid. If, you know, and have him, and he can imagine him. And I was like, well, no love for Big B Williams. And he's like, well, Cavell. He says, oh, I love Cavell. But he's more like a second-round guy. But the thing that Cavell's going to give him a chance to play at the next level is what he can do defensively. Naj is not there defensively. There are times where guys get rebounds behind him, and he's not in the right position. So if you're matching up, Naj may be able to get the dunks and do everything like that. But you're going to want to have someone that's going to be able to slow down Zion, and their best shot is going to be Big B Williams in that scenario. Javonte Smart had himself a heck of a game. It was a slow start for him. He didn't have a great first half offensively, but he still ended up, after the game completed, second leading scorer on the team with 17 points, 7 boards, and he was 2 from 6 from 3-point range. Including this shot right here.
Tigers working right to left under dial. Mays just off the far sideline gets it to Smart. He decides to launch a 3. Nothing but the bottom of the net for Javonte Smart. Give him 8 tonight. He makes it 41-24.
There's not a spot on the floor that Javonte Smart does not believe that he can make a shot from.
That can be good and bad.
It's shown itself to be a little bad early in the season, but I think he's founding his mojo. And look, this is the other thing that you don't think about. All these reps that he's getting as the starter with Tremont being on the bench sick only is going to help them for tournament time and is only going to help his development moving forward, especially if Waters decides to declare for the NBA draft and goes this year. He flirted with it last year. If he decides to go this year, I think you already got your point guard for next year. Yeah, you already got him lined up. He's already on the roster. He's already stepping up. Also, congratulations from last night's game. Skylar Mays became the 41st Tiger to reach the 1,000 point plateau. 1,000 point score. And the great thing about Scholar, when we asked him about it afterwards, Cody, and we were talking about it, he said he was very humbled. And he's just a humble dude to begin with. But he talked about how it was a privilege and how he wanted to thank everyone for giving him open looks. So we asked him, what did he remember from his first game when he scored points? He barely remembered it was Wofford, but he remembered the kicks he was wearing in his first game when he scored for LSU. Air Jordan 11 retro black and whites. He knew the shoes, my man. He knew the shoes.
The important things.
Hoops culture, dude. I love it. I love the sneaker culture, man. Those cats can remember the sneaks they wore in the game. But he could not remember how many points he scored or what the shot was when he scored his first points. But he remembered the sneaks he wore in that first game that he scored points for LSU.
Think we get some new Jordans with the new Space Jam coming out?
I'll make a phone call to LeBron.
Well, are we?
I mean, that's LeBron's baby is Space Jam 2.
It is, but one of the biggest Jordans ever to come out was the Space Jam one.
Well, I'll make a phone call to Mike for you.
Oh, okay. I only have his email, so you got his number. That's good. Good. Between the two of us, we'll get in touch with the greatest basketball player of all time.
I mean my brother Michael, who lives in upstate New York.
I don't have his email.
More Rap Game with RP3 coming up after this break right here on 103.7 The Game, your home of the LSU Tigers. Welcome back to Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parks III. Right here on 103.7 The Game, we're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios here in Upper Lafayette. You can give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. As always, 337-706-0111. We started off the show talking about LSU men's basketball. They picked up their win against Texas A&M last night inside the PMAC. There was supposed to be a baseball game yesterday. Non-conference game. Midweek game, South Alabama. Cody, I have a question. Can you still rep a school that you did not graduate from if you attended it but did not graduate?
See that you're asking me if I can still rep Southeastern.
I'm asking if I can rep South Alabama.
I still feel some sort of connection to Southeastern. I don't want to say necessarily rep it, but there's some connection there. Yes, I'll say. So you're good. We'll allow that as well.
I'm a Jaguar through and through, I guess.
Well, just like if this is even less of a connection, but I still feel like my connection with TCU is only through my oldest brother, who did go there and graduate there and all that, but I never attend. I've been to the campus 100 times, but I never attend. But I still feel a connection to TCU just because of my brother. So I think by you simply attending a school, you're allowed to feel like you can kind of rep it a little bit.
Yes, things did not work out for your boy at South Alabama. Let's just put it that way.
It's a cool club to be in, Ray. You know, pretty cool club.
Oh, I thought I was ready for big boy school. I thought I was ready for 4-year university. I was not. I still had that JUCO mindset, my man. I graduated from JUCO, no problems. Got to South Alabama, I was like, uh-oh.
You want me to do what now?
What? I ain't ready for this. I worked at Toys R Us at the time, trying to balance that and going to and being like 20 years old, working at Toys R Us, worried about going to see the new Star Wars movies when they come out. I did not have my priorities together.
It sounded all right to me.
So, South Alabama game yesterday. It got postponed because of the weather, and that was for a good reason. As someone who was there at the PMAC last night and got there early, weather was not great, and it got worse actually later. But they went ahead. LSU has rescheduled the baseball game against South Alabama due to that weather. They're now going to play at 6 p.m. on April the 3rd, and fans can still use their Game 8 ticket on the rescheduled date. Eric Walker was scheduled to start.
E-Dub
was scheduled to start on Tuesday, which would make his first start in 20 months. He instead will make his return tonight when LSU hosts Southern.
The Jaguars.
That's right. In-town rivalry. That'll be at 6:30 p.m.
Correct, but not here on 103.7 The Game.
That is correct. Correct. And there will be no interrupting the Five Guys Stories and Lies tonight. Five Guys Stories and Lies returns in its full force tonight, 6 to 8, right here on 103.7 The Game.
It's really the Will Wade show that's preempting this, not Five Guys, but that's neither here nor there.
I was trying to give our local homies some love, but that's okay.
I don't know them personally. Maybe I need to get
I know a couple of them personally.
I need to meet these old guys.
Five Guys Stories and Lies tonight, 6 to 8 p.m., and that'll be followed then from 8 to 9 by the Will Wade show. I'm sure he'll have plenty to say.
We found out Chris Blair is going to host the Will Wade show and not call the baseball game. No. The baseball game's only going to be aired locally, so it'll be over in Baton Rouge on one of those side stations that I can't think of off the top of my head, but...
Wow.
It won't be on 98.1, the flagship station for LSU sports. You will hear the Will Wade show tonight, not LSU baseball.
But Chris Blair will not be on the call.
He will be at the Will Wade show, not LSU baseball. They're sending Buzzy Heidel and Doug Thompson.
That's a little shade towards Southern's way. You can't even get Chris Blair on the call. Just saying.
I like Buzzy.
I like Buzzy too.
National champion.
We'll talk more about LSU baseball, about Eric Walker pitching tonight. And LSU basketball with our good friend from Tiger Details, the legend himself, Ron Higgins. He'll be joining us here on the Rap Game with RP3 after this break right here on 103.7 The Game.
Seven on the shot clock, flag, crossover. Darius Day strips it loose. Javonte Smart the other way. He's got numbers. Steps by a defender, goes right to left, up and under, layup good. That'll make it 54-39.
That was the voice of the LSU Tigers, the one and only Chris Blair on the call from last night's LSU men's basketball game, where the Tigers were able to pull away from the Aggies 66-55. It wasn't the prettiest game. Second half was definitely sloppy on LSU's part, but the Tigers keep things rolling, remain in the driver's seat for the SEC regular season championship, and did, most importantly, clinch that double bye for the conference tournament held in Nashville in a few weeks. We're going to talk more about the LSU men's basketball team as well as the baseball team as we're going to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our good friend from Tiger Details, the one and only, the legendary man himself. He was rocking the jacket last night, Ron Higgins. Ron, how are you this morning, brother?
I'm good, man. It was one of those games last night where you just kind of slogged your way through it. You know, just you knew you had A&M out man on the inside. You killed them inside. You were terrible from 3-point range, but you kind of found the things that worked for you, and you just got to the end and said next.
Yeah, and it was Ron, it was one of those games. I mean, early on, it was kind of it was definitely high flying. The first LSU scored its first 14 points, all came in the paint. The first eight were on dunks, so they were attacking A&M down low. They knew they had the height advantage with Big B Williams, Nasri. They went with the two bigs in the three guard lineup with Tremont Waters out. What were your thoughts? It was an ugly game. They had to slug through it, obviously. But what were your thoughts about the game plan that they had? Will Wade has seemingly done a nice job adjusting to his opponent. He knew he had had the height advantage against A&M, and they took advantage of it last night. What were your thoughts about that, about their kind of game plan heading into the game without Waters?
They knew what they had to do. They had to attack inside, and they did that. It's funny, LSU got up by 21 and really didn't know what to do with that because they don't get up by 21. They haven't. The amount of their 20-point leads in SEC play, or you could probably count them on one hand. They're used to being a dogfight of just possession war. And last night it was interesting that and they got too comfortable. And it's human nature when you get up by 20 that you kind of get a little sloppy, and you try some things that you normally wouldn't try because you feel like you oh, I can have a turnover here. We'll be okay. You know, or I can take this. I can take this shot. It might not be the greatest shot in the world, but you know what? I don't think they can come back and win. I mean, I think we know you probably win this, and so it got. You know, they kind of went that way the second half, but they did enough things to win. I mean, that said, it'll be nice to have Tremont back for Saturday's game in Alabama and then the Florida game and then Vanderbilt. I still think as good as Javonte Smart played Saturday against Tennessee and to an extent last night, I still think this team, there's more of a smoothness about it offensively when Tremont's there. I just really believe that. I think the players believe that too. They know it's there's really no margin of error when Tremont's not there, and with him, yes, he makes some turnovers, but he gets the ball back for you too. So I think they're looking forward to having him back. And they won two games without him, and it raised their confidence level immensely.
We're on with Ron Higgins of Tiger Details. Ron, let's talk a little bit about that. You know, Will Wade even mentioned that in Saturday's presser about Javonte. He says it's not going to be aesthetically pleasing to look at. It's not always the cleanest, but he has so much energy that he kind of gets through it, right? Tremont's a little bit more smoother, and the offense runs far more smoothly. But how important is it for them? I know Saturday was huge because they took down the number 5 team in the country, and A&M is kind of a, you know, they're a below 500 ball club. But how important is it for them to have Smart have these reps moving forward? It's just going to aid them during the conference tournament and the big dance. Correct?
Well, absolutely, it's huge. You know, it's huge to have him out there for that amount of minutes. Run the team either. They haven't. With Javonte on the floor and Tremont off it, until the Tennessee game, I think maybe because Javonte knew that he wasn't going to stay out there a long time, he was a bit rushed when he played before, maybe tried some things that didn't work because he knew he had to make something happen because he didn't think he was going to be out there a long, long time. And he seems to be more relaxed knowing that he has all these minutes. So he's got to figure some way to translate that until Tremont comes back and maybe playing less minutes. He's got to figure out how to translate that and play at that pace to where, as John Wooden used to say, be quick but don't hurry.
Right.
He needs to learn how to play that pace when he's maybe not having that many minutes as he had over the weekend. But, man, he doesn't have a great outside shot. But, and really honestly, probably if you looked at the shot chart, most of his three-pointers this year come from, you know, top of the key is where he's most comfortable. But he has an NBA guard body. And he's able to get in the lane and bounce off people and absorb blows and finish plays. And that's his greatest strength. And the rest of it's going to come for him. I think the outside shot will be more consistent as the more time he gets in college.
Naz Reid had a bounce-back game last night. Ron, 18 points, game high, and then tied for the game high for rebounds with 11, including 8 on the defensive glass. What were your thoughts on his bounce back performance after being held scoreless in regulation against Tennessee?
I'm just saying, the foul problem is Tennessee kind of just got in his head. I just thought he kind of pressed the rest against Tennessee and just didn't, you know. But he still rebounded against Tennessee and had a decent rebound game. I could tell last night he was into it. I mean, he went after the first, you know, missed shot of the game like his life depended on it. And he just, you could tell that he was fully engaged in this one and, you know, kind of, he could tell it was going to be his night because I thought he was into it, stay out of foul trouble. And, he's pretty good when you stay out of foul trouble. He's pretty good. And then most time you can count on him for double figures and points and a lot of times rebounds when he's still out of foul trouble now.
Marlon Taylor, it's as if he has springs in his shoes, Ron. It's been a long time since I've seen a guy that can jump that high with such ease. It looks like it takes him no effort whatsoever. Like he exerts absolute no energy just to bounce as high as he does. And so many times on those alley-oops or even that baseline dunk that he had to start the game where it's just he gets up so high with his hops. Like it's as if he has to make a conscious decision to pull himself down because if he didn't, he'd just fly right over the backboard. I know I'm embellishing a little bit, but Marlon just can jump himself right out of the gym.
Yeah, and you got to – I also credit Will Wade for putting him in a position to where he operates efficiently the best. That's one thing Will Wade talks about analytics all the time and how he uses them. And he understands from looking at stats and looking where players – operate from on best on the court. He puts him in those positions, and you know, you look at Marlon. He comes flying in from the baseline almost every offensive play when the ball goes up, and he jumps so quick. His explosion is so quick that he's up before you even have a chance to defend him or you know just try to get in his way. That's the first thing I'm impressed is that he's a quick jumper. Yeah, he gets up and stays up there a long time. You know, kind of decides when he wants to come down, but he gets up in a hurry. And he's been fun to watch this year. Emmett Williams can get up. He's another guy. They recruited guys that really. Play their positions well, and they put them in their spots where they operate from the best. And I think this has just been a really well coached team with guys that understand their roles and understand what Will Wade is trying to do with them in their roles. And that's probably a key to this basketball team this year that they got players who understand their roles that they stick to those roles because they know that the Will Wade has figured out this is where they operate from best on the court, and it works.
We're on with Ron Higgins, Tiger Details. Ron, before we transition over to baseball, one more basketball question. Any concern whatsoever by the fact that they do not shoot the ball very, very well? They were only 34.8% for the game last night, and they shot 10.5% from three. For the season, they're not a high-percentage field goal shooting team. They get a lot of dunks. They get a lot of putbacks. They get a lot of attacking the basket. And from time to time, they heat up from three. Any concern at all about this team not being able to shoot the ball better?
Yeah, I'm concerned. And I know Will Wade said, oh, yeah, we'll make them. Well, there should be a concern. I mean, last night was garbage. I mean, really. I mean, their three-point shooting was garbage last night. And quite honestly, it hasn't been very good. I mean, they've made some shots in the clutch, yeah. But if you go back, this team really hasn't shot the ball that great from outside in a while. Fortunately, honestly, LSU's best offense probably the past couple of weeks at least has been guards driving to the basket and getting the ball up on the backboard and have LSU's, their trio to rebound with a bunch of piranhas. Just come in and attack the glass and grab it and follow or dunk it. That's kind of been their best offense. I do think it's a concern. I'd be concerned. I would. It's something they've just simply got to shoot better. These last three games and going to the NCAA tournament. NCAA tournament, it's rare that you win a game when you go stone cold on the outside. I mean, you got to have something out there, and you can't have a 2-for-18 night or whatever it was last night. They haven't shot the ball that great from 3-point range in a couple of weeks. But they're still finding ways to win. But it's getting to the point where they really need to start making those shots, heading the postseason.
Yeah, they're only shooting. 467 on the year as a team, and they're shooting only 326 from three-point range. So Definitely a little bit of a lull. They were shooting the ball better earlier in the season. But a win is a win. Obviously, they are still in the driver's seat for the SEC regular season championship. They'll play Alabama on Saturday. They gutted out the win against Bama to start SEC play, but Bama's trying to fight their way into the NCAA tournament. They're a bubble team. Any concern? What are some of the challenges that they're going to face on Saturday, Ron, in Tuscaloosa?
Well, I think it's hard for LSU to win in Tuscaloosa. They all struggle there. They just seem to don't play well there. I think Alabama has talent. They've got length. The first game they played this year, I don't know if Alabama's backcourt played very well, but they do have some long athletes who are pretty versatile. And I think LSU's really got to bring it on the road. I mean, they haven't lost a road game yet, but Tuscaloosa. These last two road games are places where LSU has struggled. At Alabama and at Florida, LSU has struggled in both places. This is not a way you want your schedule to end at the end of the year by playing, having to play back-to-back road games at those places before playing Vanderbilt the last regular season game. So, both these games are extremely losable for LSU. That said, you got Kentucky playing at Tennessee Saturday, and so somebody's going to take a loss there. So these last three games are tremendously interesting, really are.
Ron, let's switch over to the Diamond, brother. The game yesterday against South Alabama was washed out due to the rain. It's been rescheduled for April, and Eric Walker was supposed to get the start. But now that's been bumped till today when they take on Southern, old crosstown rivalry there. What do you expect to see from Walker tonight when he takes the bump for LSU?
Well, he struggled his last time out. But honestly, except for Jaden Hill and probably Todd Peterson, LSU's pitchers haven't been necessarily sharp and so far this year. I mean, even in their starters, I mean, Zach Hess has a 5.19 ERA after, his first two games and 8.2 innings. Landon Marceau, the freshman, struggled a bit last time out, but, still won. I mean, the thing concerned with LSU is right now, is that I still feel like they're not getting great starting pitching from the guy that you immediately need it from is Zach Hess. He was a bit better the last game, but still he needs to be a little more dominant than he has been. I'm just guessing that LSU will be 8-0 after tonight, going to their series at Texas this weekend, and they got to up their game, especially their pitching, because Texas is Texas. They're 7-2 so far, and won 2 of 3 from UL Lafayette. I mean, the Louisiana, the Cajuns, battling pretty good in every game. But LSU's got to up their game this weekend, and that starts with their pitching. I think their hitting has been pretty good. Zach Watson improved his batting average by over 100 points this past weekend, and that was a big bonus for him. So, yeah, I think LSU should be 8-0 after tonight, and it's good to be 8-0. But they know they've got to get better quickly, because they're about to play a pretty decent team on the road in their home stadium. And I find it interesting, of all the places Paul Mainieri's coached at, he's never coached a game at the University of Texas. So it's a good experience for him, too.
Ron, we'll wrap it up with this, brother. Any concern about the amount of successful stolen bases that have occurred against the Tigers so far this year?
Mainieri has put that on the pitchers. He's put that
really?
To the pitchers. Yeah. Because we got to get the ball to play quicker. He has put that on his pitchers. He's came out and said that. The game before that, he said, our pitchers have got to get the ball to play quicker. At this point, there's a concern, but, if they know what the problem is, then they can fix it. And obviously, right now, they think the problem is that pitchers are taking too long and they're delivering windup to get the ball to the plate and guys are on base. We'll see if they get that fixed. But, it starts tonight, Eric Walker on the mound. Starting form again. He had his first appearance of the year was a good one. His second one, he struggled. And as far as relief, so now he's back in the starting role. And I think this is it would benefit the Tigers greatly to have him back close to the form that he was in 2 years ago as a starter. I think he can get there. Got in pitch for a whole year, and he's kind of getting back into it as far as game action. So we'll see what happens tonight.
Ron, I appreciate you coming on as always, brother. Great stuff, and keep up the good work over there at Tiger Details, and we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
All right, take care. We'll see you.
Ron Higgins, Tiger Details, breaking down LSU hoops and baseball for us. We will wrap up the first hour of Rap Game with RP3 right here on 103.7 The Game after this break. Welcome back to Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parsons III, here on 103.7 The Game, broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios. Hey, guys, this Friday, starting at 4 p.m., you can join Ben Love and Bumper to Bumper Sports live from Rufino's on the River. It's your big chance to meet Ruffin Rodriguez in person. Trev Falk will be a live guest, the former LSU linebacker and current LCA championship coach. You can also enter to win Houston Astros tickets and start your weekend off with some beautiful scenery on the river. So make sure to go check out the brother Ben Love on Bumper to Bumper Sports live from Rufino's on the River this Friday starting at 4 o'clock. John Marques from thetowntalk.com and The Town Talk will join us to start off the second hour of Rap Game with RP3 right here on 103.7 The Game, your home of the LSU Tigers.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette, we are Acadiana's sports station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time to step your game up.
Boy, you wouldn't know how to write your name if it wasn't set for like locker.
It's Rap Game with RP3, Raymond Parks III.
One of God's own prototypes. High-powered mutant of some kind never even considered for mass production. Too weird to live, too rare to die.
Want to interact? Call in at 337-706-0111.
We have it. Yeah, we have it.
RP3 is taking the mic and bringing you to the center of the sports world on Rap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
You just got to keep living, man. LIVIN.
Solid. I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
Welcome to the second hour of Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parts III, right here on 103.7 The Game, broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios. Give us a call on the Arco Equipment Hotline today, 337-706-0111. We talked LSU men's basketball as well as LSU baseball in the first hour. Now we're going to switch it over to the high schools. That's right. The state's girls basketball tournament is currently going on right now inside the Rapides Parish Coliseum there in Alexandria. And we're going to reach out to our good friend from the Town Talk and the TownTalk.com frequent guest of the show, my good friend John Marques. John, how are you this morning, brother?
I'm doing well, Ray. How about you?
Doing great, man. Doing great. I want to start things off. I know you're going to be working the tournament, helping out papers from across the state with coverage of the state championships there held at the renovated Rapides Parish Coliseum. But you also wrote a very good column today that appears that's currently on the TownTalk.com website and has appeared in the Wednesday edition of the Town Talk, where you talked about a man behind the scenes that's helped grow and market all the state championships and the LHSAA. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about the man in question and what inspired you to do the piece on him?
Well, it's if anybody's been to a state championship event in the last 25 to 28 years, you've heard his voice because he does all the PA trophy presentations, and it's a guy by the name of Mitch Schmall. And in August, Mitch is retiring after 28 years of working for the LHSAA, and he's more than just the voice of handing out the trophy. He's really, in large measure, responsible for how professional the LHSAA has become in the last couple of decades, especially, you know, you can attest to this, Ray, if you've gone to any of their state championship events, they're really done on a first-class basis. They really make the kids special, and it's because Mitch was hired as the first marketing director for the LHSAA, and they believe he might be the first marketing director of any state high school association in the country.
Oh, wow.
You know, when Tommy Henry hired him back in about 1991-92, that wasn't a job that a lot of organizations or state associations had. And, you know, Mitch was telling me when he was hired, their sponsorship revenue was probably $25,000 or less, and most of it came from Gatorade to have their name on the Superdome football championships. And when Mitch steps down after basically this school season, you know, their sponsorship is pushing $1 million annually. I joke with him that you can't go, you know, more than 2 minutes without hearing on the PA, such and such, the official sponsor of the LHSAA. Well, you know, you got to give Mitch credit for that. He really helped take the LHSAA to a new level.
And his high level of productivity and results is they're going to replace him not with a single person, but they're actually using a firm. In your column, you say that it's the same firm that handles the marketing for LSU, correct?
Correct. You know, Mitch was joking. You know, I mean, there's been a lot of turnover at the LHSA in the last 5 years or so. And, you know, I started covering sports in this state in 1990. And, you know, you had certain figures. Tommy Henry was a longtime commissioner. And then you had B.J. Gazzara, who was his right man, and others. And they've, you know, retired slowly. And now Mitch is doing it. And I think they've come to the realization that it's time to take it even to another level. And they're hiring the firm that handles marketing for LSU, sports marketing for LSU, the University of Maryland, University of Virginia, and there's several other, probably six or seven state high school associations. So, I mean, it's an exciting time for the LHSA. If you love high school sports in the state, it's also a precarious time with not only the split of non-select and select schools, but also what happened, you know, a few weeks ago, where now the select schools can have their own championships. It's probably a wise decision by the LHSA's part to even get more help, because, you know, you don't know if Allstate's going to want to be the title sponsor if certain schools aren't going to be participating under that championship banner. So it's going to be an interesting next several months for sure.
We're on with John Marquez. He's a senior columnist, weekly columnist for the Town Talk and the TownTalk.com. You can read his latest column on the TownTalk.com and all of his previous work as well. John, let's stay with the high schools. You and I have not had the opportunity to talk about the decision that was made at the annual meeting there in Baton Rouge, where led by the Turlings Catholic principal, was able to get not only football but also basketball and baseball and softball to have the opportunity to have their state championships for the select schools, not at the same sites as the public schools, the non-select schools. And it was kind of overwhelming. They had to re-vote on it, and then it just kind of passed. In your opinion, as someone who's covered high school athletics in the state since 1990, do you believe that this is going to be the nail in the coffin for public schools and private schools still being under the same umbrella in the state?
Yeah, that's a good question. I really don't know. You would think probably, but you know, I've been out at the Coliseum the past 2 days, and you've had, for the most part, the smaller schools have played the first two nights. You finally had the 4A semifinals late last night, but you know, you're talking about some of these schools that they just don't have much of a following or a fan base, because you know, you're talking about small schools. And the thing that I've noticed is I've seen a lot of bad basketball, just because would these teams have made it that far had you had one field for Class C schools or one field for Class B schools or one field for Class 1A schools, but they split it off. So, you know, you're getting teams that didn't win a district game, yet they're in the state semifinals. Now, on the other hand, would it be a better environment if they're playing these games in front of 400 fans in a 800-seat gym or a 500-seat gym in an 8,000-seat arena that's 95% empty? You know, it's just – I just don't know. You know, I think the key is going to be how well or the football championships work next year when you do have the private schools meeting outside the Superdome. You know, and as you know, somebody – high ranking in LHSA told me, you know, how are some of these select school coaches going to explain to their kids, hey, we have to go play outside in 35 degree weather when it's raining while our counterparts are playing in the Superdome?
And my other point to that, John, and I wrote about this in a column for myself, was I get the, you know, the scenario was, well, Catholic High and Notre Dame have played a couple times now in recent years. Well, they could simply have it at Cajun Field. And my rebuttal to that is, so you're going to have a state championship game held at the same place they already held their jamboree. Like, and that's the other thing. Is I don't think the people in charge, whether it was the Winfield principal who helped spearhead the split to begin with in football all those years ago, to now all the private schools kind of striking back, I don't think anyone took a moment to go, what's going to be the best for the kids in all of this? No one, all of these quote-unquote adults, didn't once think about the kids, because 99% of these kids that play in those state championships games, John, you know this, don't even go on to play in college football. So being able to play in the same place where Drew Brees is throwing touchdown passes means the world to them. Do I want 10 to 11 state championship games in football? Absolutely not. It's a train wreck. But to have these kids – and then to have them say, we're going to play at McNeese or at UL or Independence Stadium, you're really doing the kids a disservice, don't you think?
Yeah, you know, and I think I went to my first reclassification meeting probably around 93, 94. I don't know if it's in even years or odd years that they hold. I know it's every 2 years. And I was struck going through it because everybody's jockeying for the right district because they don't, you know, back then you didn't want to be in a district with John Curtis or Evangel. They were doing everything they could to get away from those. But you never heard once what's in the best interest of our student athletes. It was what's in the best interest of our football school. And, you know, the thing is the split has been mismanaged from the start. That's my biggest beef, and I know Eddie Bonine is hamstrung as the commissioner, is that our proposals have to come from the schools and the school principals. But if they had elected to do the split and then let's reduce the number of classifications we have on both sides, reduce the select schools by one division, reduce the non-select by at least two, to where you're back to maybe instead of seven divisions, you have eight, where it's more manageable. You actually have a true playoff system for most of the schools. You don't automatically qualify for the state semifinals like several teams do in softball or even girls basketball. I think you would have had a better chance to succeed than the watered down playoffs that we're stuck with right now. And you know, I can tell from my own experience with my own two nephews who played at Barb back when Barb was winning three straight state titles. You know, they had to go through Catholic Baton Rouge every year.
And then their dad told them one year, well, you don't have to worry about facing them next year because the split was going in for baseball. And one of them said, well, that's stupid. And, you know,
that perfectly sums it up. Yeah.
That's coming from a student athlete. And it's just been mismanaged from the start. And only time's going to tell whether taking the championship events and splitting those up. I just don't know if anybody knows what the true outcome's going to be.
We're on with John Marques. He's a senior weekly columnist for the Town Talk and the TownTalk.com. John, let's switch it over to the college hardwood. Three-way tie right now atop the SEC standings between LSU, Kentucky, and Tennessee. LSU holds the tiebreaker, having beat both Kentucky and Tennessee. But it's not going to end, more than likely, in a three-way tie. Tennessee and Kentucky face off, I want to say Saturday. And LSU has a couple of games in places that they traditionally struggle at. Saturday in Tuscaloosa against Alabama, and then next week in Gainesville against Florida, who they've already lost to. With three games to go in the SEC race, I know how you want it to shake out as a diehard bluegrass man yourself, but how do you think this is going to shake out here in the last three games, brother?
Well, LSU should win it. They have the easier schedule, although, playing at Florida seems to have actually started playing like you would expect Florida to play lately. I think Kentucky can probably put the nail in the coffin to Tennessee Saturday, provided Kentucky's healthy. They're already without their big man and their freshman guard. I think he hurt his ankle last night. But LSU, to their credit, I don't know how they can keep pulling out all these games in overtime. I think they've six or seven of their games already have gone to overtime this year. Just an amazing fact, and the fact that they keep winning them is even more incredible. I would give them the solid advantage. And the key for, I think, Kentucky at this point is you want to at least finish second so you get the double bye, so you don't have to play perhaps four straight days in the SEC tournament to win it. I think Kentucky has their eyes on a bigger prize where, at LSU that hasn't had nearly the success of basketball, I think the SEC championship would just mean more to the Tigers and their fans at this point.
John, I appreciate you coming on as always, brother. Enjoy the state championships up there at the Rapides Parish Coliseum, and we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Hey, thanks, Ray. Talk to you later.
John Marques, Town Talk, and the TownTalk.com, breaking down some high school action for us. That's right. We brought the high schools to the rap game today.
The Rapides, what now? What is it now?
Rapides Parish Coliseum.
Is that where the Flint, Michigan Mega Bowl was held? I believe same Coliseum. No? My bad.
That is where I thought you were going to go with wrestling because
well, you
the house
that
show,
yeah.
That house show before Monday Night Raw at the Cajun Dome was held the Saturday before at the Rapides Parish Coliseum.
And that's in Alexandria.
That is correct.
Yeah. And they also did one in Shreveport. And then they went to it wasn't Picayune or Tupelo, but one of those other small Mississippi cities.
Thanks.
What?
Say that again? You said, I understand Tupelo. Who was
Picayune?
Okay.
Picayune, Tupelo.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of Bay St. Louis. I think of other small Mississippi places.
You could have said Vicksburg.
I don't know that one. Is it on the sign on the interstate?
It's a historic Civil War battlefield.
Well, I wasn't alive during the Civil War. Why would I know that?
I wasn't alive during the Civil War. It's the best thing you've said on this show since you've been back from being married. I want that clip, and we're going to put it in an audio file and just pull it up. I wasn't alive for the Civil War. Really? You weren't alive for the Civil War shoots? Oh, man.
Happy Pokemon Day.
Oh, there it is.
Raymond, happy Pokemon Day.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate it. And happy Pokemon Day to you.
Yay!
Well.
That's the coolest thing you've ever said on this show.
More Rap Game with RP3 coming up after the break here on 103.7 The Game. That's right, Acadiana. Happy Pokemon Day. I have absolutely no idea what any of that just was. I don't. Okay. Hold on.
You have to know some of that.
The first thing was Pikachu, right? Right. That's the little yellow dude.
Pika. Correct.
Okay. All
you
right.
got that one.
All right. I got that
one. This is a.
Prepare for trouble.
Make it double.
Team Rocket? Nothing?
Dude.
Nothing.
Dude. I have no idea what you're talking about. If you,
I need to spend a little quality time at the Parch household just so the youngest of the Parch family can understand the greatness of Pokemon.
I'm sure she's going to be exposed to it. I'm sure there'll be one of those other little demons in her class will show her the Pokemon.
Yes, I have to control Case, and he wants to bring Pokemon cards to school every day. And it's like not just like one or two, right, to show your buddies. No, like 18 Pokemon cards. It's like, dude, pick one. Like, I understand bringing because like for you, it was probably like baseball trading cards or something.
Yeah, you'd bring the whole album, then you'd have them, your whole book, and then you'd try to trade with some of your boys, and you're like, hey, I'm missing the Gary Sheffield.
Right, but you know. At 6 years old, I'm like, no, bring one Pokemon card, and then bring it back to me when you get home.
Oh, that struggle's real for you, brother.
It is.
That struggle is real for
but
you.
Pokemon turning 23 years old today, so happy birthday to Pokemon.
Oh, happy birthday. Happy birthday to Pikachu. And the rest of the gang.
It started out as the 23 years ago, there were only 151 of the gang. Now there are like 800 and something. But 20-something years will do that.
Now, tell me, did you take part in the phenomenon that happened a couple years ago where people were going to go catch the Pokemon on their phone?
It's still a thing. It's the phenomenon. Yeah, like the pop culture deal of it is over, but I can open up the Pokemon Go app right now on my phone. I'm level 29.
And predators and people that would rob you knowing that you're
all
doing
that.
That.
Well, that was just being dumb. Those people were going to get robbed regardless, whether it was Pokemon related or not.
I just remember watching I actually worked with people that were younger. I was working at a newspaper, and they were really into it.
Yeah.
And then I would watch them, and I'm like, what are you doing? And they're just walking around like streets and going to like abandoned bowling alleys, and I'm like, I'm pretty sure you probably shouldn't be going to the abandoned bowling alley
when you open up the Pokemon Go app, like once it finishes loading, the first thing before you can play the game, you have to hit OK under a warning that says, do not trespass while playing Pokemon Go. I swear. Like, they had to figure that out real quick. Wait, we need to put this disclaimer in or we're going to get sued to hell and back. But
yeah, that's
to bring it up, here's a great way for you to introduce yourself to Pokemon. And for anybody, and I'm actually being real in this moment, Detective Pikachu is a movie. It's coming out. It's a live-action movie.
Ryan Reynolds is doing
the
voice.
Ryan Reynolds is the voice of Pikachu. It's got the one of the scientist young guys from Jurassic World, the latest one, the Fallen Kingdom Jurassic World. Okay. One of the scientist guys is like the main character along with Pikachu in it. And it's a mystery movie. It's a detective movie with a Pokemon coat of paint. If you see what I'm saying. It's a Sherlock Holmes movie. Put it to you like that. It's a Sherlock Holmes type movie where there's one mystery that lasts the entire movie that they're trying to figure out, except instead of Sherlock Holmes, you get Pikachu in a Sherlock Holmes hat. And if you are somewhat interested in Pokemon, that's the way to maybe go and get yourself fully integrated into it, because if you're 10 minutes into the movie and you're like, okay, wait, no, Pokemon's definitely not for me, then at least you won't have a total waste of your money. You can still enjoy the mystery part of the movie and then be done with Pokemon if that's your choice.
When I first heard about this said movie that you're speaking of, and Ryan Reynolds was part of it,
yes,
I thought it was a Deadpool promo.
Right, it would make sense.
And then Deadpool would come out and just kill
Pikachu.
Pikachu.
Right, yes. No, that I think we all expected that.
and then when that did not occur...
Wait, this is real?
This is really happening?
I'm just saying, Detective Pikachu's coming out in a couple of months, like a month, month and a half. You might want to check it out, maybe take the young one and think she would like it. And you can decide for yourself whether or not you'll never be a huge Pokemon fan. You've missed the boat on that. That's not your fault. But
it's not my
it's
fault.
It's not your fault.
I like that.
But you can decide.
Bless
for
your heart. You just did the Southern thing of bless your heart.
Basically.
Bless your heart.
Oh, child.
Oh, you don't know any better. you should really be into Pokemon. Like, but you missed that boat. That's okay.
You know what else you missed? You missed that I somehow finagled 7 minutes worth of Pokemon Day talk on the Rap Game, and I could not be more excited. Happy Pokemon Day, one and all.
You should just tweet out that segment, just the segment by itself of Cody and Pokemon talk.
Alan would be real mad right now. I like you better than Alan right now, Ray. You're doing good.
I'm glad I'm on your good side. When we come back, we will get back to the sports talk and leave Pikachu behind because he did not get an invite to the NFL Combine in Indianapolis. We will talk NFL Combine, talk plenty of LSU players and plenty of Louisiana players are part of that. We'll talk that with George Bremer, who works there in Indianapolis and covers the Combine. He's also an Indianapolis Colts beat writer. We'll talk more with George when we come back after this break right here on Rap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parts III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're live from the 237 Roof Studios here in Upper Lafayette. Give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, as always, 337-706-0111. Right now in Indianapolis at Lucas Oil Stadium, the NFL Scouting Combine is in full effect. It's gotten off to a glorious start with all the coverage. We know from here there's plenty of representation from the state of Louisiana. Several LSU players are taking part in the Combine, everyone from Cole Tracy to Foster Moreau, as in Devin White. There's also Jazz Ferguson from Northwestern State University, and let's not forget about his brother, Jalen Ferguson, from Louisiana Tech, the NCAA career sack leader. He was going, then they took away his invitation, and then they decided to allow him back to come back. So a lot of Louisiana representation up there trying to improve their draft stock. We're going to dive right into that with about the Combine with our next guest. He is the Indianapolis Colts beat writer and sports editor of the Herald Bulletin in Anderson, Indiana. Welcome to the show, George Bremer. George, how are you this morning, brother?
Great. Glad to join you.
George, appreciate you making some time for us. I want to start some things off. We'll get to the Combine in a second, but I want to start off with the Colts. Terrific season there under Frank Reich, first season. What were your thoughts about the season? It started off so slow. There were question marks with Andrew Luck. Could he return to form? Will he ever be the guy again with all the surgeries and the down miss time and the trips to Europe? And there was a bunch of question marks going on there with the Colts. They had a tremendous season. Did that season live up to your expectations? And where do you think the Colts can go from here now?
Yeah, I think they exceeded almost everybody's expectations this year. I think it's been a really long year here in Indianapolis. We were just talking about that earlier. We were here last year, and all the questions were about, is Andrew throwing? When's he going to throw again? You know, will he be back on the field? How much confidence do you have in him and the fact that he'll be your quarterback? And then, obviously, the whole situation that happened with Josh McDaniels and then Frank Reich coming in. And when we were here at the Combine last year, Reich had been a head coach for 2 weeks. And so he was really still just feeling his way and meeting everybody here. And now it's a whole new ballgame here. And I think Luck has proven that he's back, that he's Andrew Luck again. There's no more questions about him and his health. And I think Frank Reich really, to be able to come back from a 1-5 start the way that he was able to do that, turn the team around, win a playoff game, I think he answered a lot of questions too. You know, whenever you bring in a first-year head coach, you always kind of wonder how it's going to go. But I think his playing career brought a lot of respect into that locker room. Just the moment that he stepped in there, 14 years in the league, and everybody knows what he did, especially with Buffalo. I think there was a lot of he had a lot of attention in that locker room from day one because of that. And I think he's got this team now believing in his way of doing things. And it's really just kind of a simple process. They focus on that week and that day, and nothing else matters. And I think that's how they're moving forward. And I think right now they're excited about this draft. They're going to have 9 picks. Last year you had two rookies who were all pro, first team all pro. I think there's a lot of excitement about how they can build off the foundation they've had and where this team's headed.
I know when they made the decision to go after Josh McDaniels and to bring him in as a head coach, and then obviously he pulled out of that job. And then they turned to Frank Reich, who was on the staff with the Philadelphia Eagles. Two totally different guys, personality-wise and everything like that. Frank's a more down-to-earth, blue-collar guy. I think that plays better there in Indianapolis. Talk about the relationship. It seemed that he and Andrew Luck really connected early on, and they have an immense amount of respect for one another right off the bat.
I think that that honestly is the most important thing that's gone on here. They really did kind of click immediately, and I think part of that is, in many ways, Frank Reich shares a lot of the characteristics of Oliver Luck, Andrew's dad, you know, career backup, similar demeanor. I think there's a lot in common. I'm not saying that necessarily Andrew looks at him as his dad, but I think he's a guy that he can relate to very easily because he shared a lot of the same experiences. And then obviously Frank Reich has stood in Andrew's shoes. You know, he's been out there. He's seen the game from that vantage point, and I think that means a lot to Luck. And then I think most importantly, the scheme really fits Andrew. They get the ball out a lot faster. He got hit a lot less, by far the best year of his career as far as protection goes. And then they're going to be aggressive, though, when they need to be. So the deep shot's still in there. You still have that Andrew Luck mentality of trying to keep a play alive and make a big play on every snap. But it's tempered now with an idea of, first and foremost, going to keep the quarterback upright, going to make sure he doesn't take a beating, you know, the way he did his first 6 years in the league. And it's all come together to a point where I think they're very much on the same page. And that's the most important relationship in Indianapolis right now. I think to watch the way that Andrew grew last year under Reich, and to know that he's got a full offseason this year. I mean, the amazing thing to me about last year and what Andrew was able to do and be the comeback player of the year, he didn't even really start practicing with the team until training camp. He missed the entire spring, and obviously the entire season before. Now, you know, he's going to be part of the program from day one. So his second year in the offense, there's a lot of reason to believe that he's going to even go up from what we saw last year.
We're talking to George Bremer. He's the Indianapolis Colts beat writer and sports editor for the Herald Bulletin in Anderson, Indiana, as well as the CNHI Sports Indiana executive editor. George, I know they have the wealth of draft picks coming off a terrific season. But, man, it would be great if the Colts could add some top-notch playmakers. And I hear Pittsburgh has two guys that no longer want to be Steelers that I would assume Andrew Luck would love playing with. I don't know what does the fan base think about that. There's been some talk of, you know, could the Colts be a trade partner with the Steelers for Antonio Brown, or could Le'Veon Bell end up in Indianapolis? Your thoughts as someone who covers the team, do they need to make a splash in free agency and bring in some guys via trade or free agency, or do they just continue to build like they've been doing under this administration, under their current GM?
Yeah, the big splash really just isn't Ballard's style. And I think if he's going to do that, it's going to be a very specific type of player. He's looking for a lot of different characteristics. He wants a very specific mold that he's looking for. And I don't know that I necessarily see that in this year's landscape. I don't know that there's going to be a big money free agent coming here. They've got a lot of money to spend, and they're going to spend, you know, a lot of that money. But I think it's going to be similar to what you've seen in the past couple of years as far as the way Ballard's handled business. Young guys coming off their rookie deal with a lot of, you know, room left to grow. Guys on the way up, and then really the big movement for him comes in the draft. I think in Le'Veon Bell's case, I think they like what they've got with Marlon Mack. They've got a couple of other young guys who were rookies last year in that group in Nyheim Hines and Jordan Wilkins. And I think together you've got three guys on their rookie deal, and I think they just feel like they can get the production they need in this scheme and with this quarterback with that group without going and spending the money they'd have to spend to bring Le'Veon Bell in. And as far as Antonio Brown goes, there's a lot of talk in this offense about complementing each receiver. You know, guys whose routes complement one another, whose skill sets complement one another. And as great as Antonio Brown is, he may be the best receiver in the league. I don't know that – I think he's too similar to T.Y. Hilton. I'm not sure that that's what they're going to be looking for. You know, they need a big guy. They need a possession type of boundary receiver. And that's not Antonio Brown. For all the things he does and all the amazing feats that he's capable of, that's not part of his game. So I don't really see either of those guys as being fits. And I'll be surprised if Ballard goes out and makes a big move, you know, in March. It's just not really his style. It's not really the way he's doing things. And he has talked a lot this offseason already about the faith that he has in Frank Reich and Nick Sirianni and their scheme. I think he feels like they can get more production from a lower-level player on offense and go and spend the money on defense and upgrade things in that area.
George, with that said, then what are going to be some of the things that they're looking for while they're there at the combine, scouting players with all those draft picks? What are their biggest needs this offseason that they are going to look to address with building up through the draft?
Ballard's always going to be about the trenches. So even as well as the offensive line played, I think they're still looking to add there. I don't think that'll ever change. Defensive line, absolutely, all across the board, all four spots I think they're looking for. They really need an interior guy, I think, early in the draft, because the two guys that they had last year, Al Woods and Marcus Hunt, they're both getting older, first of all, and they're both free agents. So I think we'll see as March plays out here if they bring one or both of those guys back, but I think they really need to get some youth there. I think a guy like Christian Wilkins from Clemson really seems to fit their mold. When you look at what Ballard's done and the kind of player that he's looked for in the draft, one thing that comes through, almost everybody he's drafted was a captain of their college team. I think Wilkins fits that through and through. You know, he's as good a character guy as there is down here, I think, this year at the Combine. And then he's very versatile. He can play all four of those spots on the line. There's some people who think he's a left end in this league, which is incredible as a 300-pound defensive lineman. But he's got that kind of athleticism. And so I think in their scheme where they want to move guys around, he's a perfect fit. Players like that, they're going to look for. And they need a lot of help in the defensive secondary. If they're going to be looking for a corner, I think they're going to be looking for a safety. And I think those are the things that they're going to look for early to come off the board. And this is a very interesting cornerback group because I think there's no consensus number one guy. I know Greedy Williams from LSU is up there. You hear a lot of talk about him. I think DeAndre Baker from Georgia. But it doesn't seem like, you know, most years there's one guy everybody's kind of pointing to is this is the shutdown guy, this is the top guy in this draft. I don't think that that's necessarily the case here. And so I think the last day of the combine is going to be very interesting for the Colts to kind of separate those defensive backs and see who they like the most.
Talking to George Bremer, he's the Herald Bulletin sports editor and Indianapolis Colts beat writer there in Anderson. He's there covering the NFL Combine in Indianapolis. You can follow him on Twitter at GMBREMER. Give them a follow. George, let's talk about the Combine now exclusively. What are some of the bigger storylines that you guys are kind of keeping an eye on now this week there at the Combine, whether it's players there taking part or not taking part in particular drills? What are some of the bigger storylines going on there in Indy?
Well, Kevin Colbert just stepped down from the podium a few minutes ago, and obviously that the Steelers still remain right at the top of all the top because of Bell and because of Brown. And he made it clear that they're not going to hand Antonio Brown away. You know, it's not going to be they don't seem to feel like there's a gun to their head to make this move. They're going to make sure that if they make a trade, the compensation is going to be first and foremost. He even said, and there's been a lot of talk recently about, well, they want to go to an NFC team or they want to make sure that they avoid the division or what have you. And he said that's going to play some factor. Obviously, they'd rather trade him somewhere where they don't have to see him twice a year. But the number one thing is going to be what they're getting back. So I think I came away from that press conference wondering, you know, maybe it's not as likely that Brown's gone as maybe it's been portrayed. I think it's going to take the right deal, and it's going to take the right team to do it. As far as the college players go, I think the number one story is Kyler Murray. You know, people want to find out how much does he weigh? How big is he? How big are his hands? But also, you know, how much commitment does he have to football right now? This is a guy who was drafted high in the baseball draft. If things go poorly early in his football career, will he bail? Will he go back to baseball? You know, I think he's a very interesting story. When you see what he did in winning the Heisman Trophy and what he did on the field, and you see what guys like Baker Mayfield have been able to do coming in the league, kind of changing the parameters of what people look for in a quarterback, Kyler Murray is a highly interesting story for this draft. And I think he's going to be a big story here in the next couple of days. And then the defensive line group. People talk about this defensive line group being maybe the deepest in several years. Into the second round, they feel like you're going to be getting first-round caliber defensive linemen. And so I think that is going to be a big story as well, starting with Nick Bosa and Quinnen Williams, who could be the first two guys off the board. Also Josh Allen from Kentucky. The pass rushers, the interior defensive linemen, it's such a hugely talented group. I think it's going to be I think there's a lot of GMs here kind of salivating over the thought of getting one of those guys.
George, what about the quarterback position? I know last year it was kind of stacked. We had a record number of quarterbacks taken in the first round. This year, a lot of people aren't as high on everyone. You mentioned Kyler Murray. What do you think about the quarterbacks that are there at the Combine trying to make a name for themselves? I know a lot of people, there's a lot of buzz around the kid from Duke. I got to see him up close and personal at the Independence Bowl this year. I came away going, he's okay. I didn't come away going, that's a first-round draft pick. But I don't get paid to scout. So, you know, what's the buzz about these quarterbacks at the Combine?
Yeah, I think Duke's Daniel Jones, he had a big Senior Bowl week, and that helped him. So I think he's got to continue that momentum here. And Drew Locke from Missouri is going to try to make himself a first-round pick out here as well. But it really seems like, as far as quarterbacks go, there's two guys. There's Murray, and then there's Dwayne Haskins from Ohio State. And it sounds like after that, you're looking at more projects. You know, I don't know anybody else necessarily would come in and start on day one for your team. So I think it'll be interesting to see how those two separate themselves. Haskins is in a kind of a different situation than Murray. Obviously, Murray has all those things to prove that we talked about before. Haskins is a guy who's got prototypical size, prototypical arm strength. He's probably not quite as mobile as what they look for in today's game. But I think he has enough athleticism that he can get by there. It's not a weakness necessarily for him. But he's also got to prove that with just 1 year as a starter, that he's got enough experience under his belt, that he's ready to go and take over a franchise and be the face of a team. And so it's a big week for him, not just on the field, but in the interview process. Because, you know, when you're talking about the quarterback, that has a lot to do with the evaluation for them. How are they in front of the media? Because that guy, as you well know, is going to be every day at the podium. He's going to be the face of your team, for better or worse. And so they've got to be able to handle themselves. They've got to be able to make an impression in that end, too. And I think for Haskins, it's a big week to kind of separate himself and show people, yeah, Kyler Murray is the Heisman Trophy winner. Yeah, Kyler Murray's got all the hype. But maybe, you know, Haskins is the best fit for the pro game, and he's got to go show it.
George, we'll wrap it up with this. I wanted to get your thoughts on the situation that's involving right now, Bob Kraft. The NFL suspended and levied a heavy fine against Indianapolis Colts owner Jim Irsay a few years ago, and that would have been for, I want to say, a DWI, correct?
Yep.
Do the folks there in Indiana and around Indianapolis, I would assume, I know that's a little bit of a rivalry between the Colts and the Pats, but if you're going to go after a guy for a DWI as an owner, and he also received a suspension, if I'm correct, in addition to the fine, correct? Is that
true?
Six games.
Yep.
I would assume that the folks there in Colts country are going to be expecting at least the same for someone that has been caught up in a prostitution, illegal sex trafficking sting.
I would say that there are a lot of eyeballs from Indianapolis pointed that way right now. Obviously, the rivalry goes deep there, and I think there's a lot of people who want to see. You know, how is it going to be the same kind of treatment? Does the punishment kind of fit the crime here? And yeah, in Jim Irsay's situation, he had prescription drugs, far too many of them in his car when he was pulled over. People have known that he's kind of struggled with that over the years, so I don't know that it was necessarily shocking when it happened, but it was very disappointing. And the league was very, very quick in coming down hard on that situation. Fined him the maximum allowed, which was $500,000. He was suspended for 6 games. And I think, you know, it was something that it did have an impact on the organization for a little while, because everybody was kind of waiting. How's it going to work when he gets back in? How's it going to be when he's gone? And I think his daughters kind of stepped into the void a little bit during that time and have ever since then taken, you know, bigger and bigger roles with this team. And now there's no doubt about it. I wonder if the same thing won't happen in New England, where Jonathan Kraft's kind of been groomed to take over at some point. You know, will he maybe get a little bit bigger share of the responsibilities as a result of this whole situation? But there's no doubt everybody in Indy is going to be watching that and very interested to see how the league rules on this matter.
George, I appreciate you coming on, brother. Tremendous stuff, and we'll be talking to you soon. Enjoy the rest of the week there at the Combine, and keep up the good work, my friend.
No problem. Thanks a lot. Anytime.
George Bremer brought it today from the Herald Bulletin in Anderson, Indiana.
I think you got a Colts guy now.
We got a Colts guy, an NFL Combine guy. Spreading our wings.
He has a Verizon ringback tone when you call him on his cell phone. I got excited because it's always like, enjoy this Verizon ringback tone while you wait for your... And so I yelled at you really loudly, Verizon ringback tone, as he answered the phone. So, George, my man, Serenity Now.
Serenity Now. We will wrap up this hump day edition of Rap Game with RP3 right here on 103.7 The Game after this break. Welcome back to the Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parts III, here on 103.7 The Game. You're home for the LSU Tigers and broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios here in Upper Lafayette. Just a programming reminder. Make sure to keep it live and local all day here today. Coming up, Jim Rome Show from 11 to 2. But after that, Jordy Holberg Show with Jordy Holberg from 2 to 4. The brother himself, Ben Love, will be hosting Bumper to Bumper Sports from 4 to 6. That'll lead into Five Guys, Stories and Lies from 6 to 8. And then the Will Wade Show from 8 to 9 o'clock. I want to thank all of our guests today. Ron Higgins from Tiger Details coming on, breaking down some LSU basketball and baseball. John Marques from The Town Talk and thetowntalk.com, talking high school basketball and the split. And then our good friend George Bremer telling us about the Combine in Indianapolis. Tomorrow, the Fast and Furious edition of Rap Game with RP3, 10 to 11. Make sure to tune in. You guys be safe out there. We'll talk to you tomorrow here on 103.7 The Game.